Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Connecting with Spirit. I am medium Michelle Stockatelny, and today is a really exciting day because we have our very first guest on the show, my very good friend Jill Safer, and she is an animal communicator, a healer, and a medium, and she is going to be talking to us, talking with us today a little bit about how she works on healing animals and how she can help you to start connecting and communicating with your own animal friends. So, hi Jill, how are you?
Hi Michelle, good, thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me on your show today.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. And I know that there are a lot of people that are very interested in, you know, how they can better connect with their own animal friends and how they can, you know, especially when it comes to healing, because there's so many times when I will get messages, you know, how can I connect with my animal friend that has passed over? Or, you know, they just like when people want mediumship readings for their loved ones that were human, they would very much want to know that their loved ones that were animals are safe and with them, and hopefully after we talk a bit more today, people will understand how this works for you. And we will be taking calls in just a little bit. If you are calling in today, I ask that you please keep it on topic. We are going to be talking about animals, and it's going to be great. Okay, Jill, so tell us a little bit about what it is that you do and how you got into everything.
Well, I'll start with how I got into everything. I've been a Reiki master for about 10 years. And, you know, I do still heal people, but I was really guided. You know, I got my very first animal friend at a very crucial time in my life. And, you know, within hours of having her in my home, she completely changed my life. And, you know, to this day, I'm head over heels in love with her. And I really found that passion the moment I first held her in my arms. And I started, you know, with animal Reiki. I created my own animal Reiki course based off of the Yusui Reiki lineage. And then I just, you know, one day, you know, I was speaking with a friend of mine who showed me a video of this woman who is an animal communicator. And I said, oh my goodness, that's what I do. And I thought I was alone in the world. And I thought I was the only one who could communicate with animals telepathically until I saw this video. And I was completely blown away by it. So then I, you know, shortly thereafter called myself an animal communicator and have been devising and teaching courses ever since.
Oh, that's wonderful. And so so you describe yourself as an animal communicator, healer, and a medium. How does this work? Are you able to connect with the spirits of, you know, the beloved animal friends who've transitioned? And what sort of messages will they often provide for their loved ones in the physical world?
Well, it's interesting because many people delineate, they think there's a difference between the animal soul and the human soul. And the reality is, at least in my perspective, that we are all one, and we all have the same kind of soul. So we all essentially go to the same place after we cross over. And through pictures, if I was to look at a picture of an animal who has crossed over, I would receive messages of love and healing. And, you know, a lot of times people have questions about the circumstances of their animal's passing. For example, if an animal gets lost or if an animal, if an animal switches homes and the person wants to know what's happened with that animal, I'm able to really connect with that animal based on a picture and be able to bring the messages of love and healing and closure mostly to the people who miss their animals.
Oh, that sounds so wonderful. And I mean, I know during my own readings, there's often times when I'll feel the brush up against my leg and I will see a cat or a dog and, you know, I'll ask the sitter, oh, you know, I'm sensing this type of animal. Is this some, you know, one that you had? And while I don't specialize in this by any means, it's always wonderful when that happens because I always feel such love from the animal spirit who just wants their loved one here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Well, I do see we have a few callers, so we're going to take our first caller and see what their question is about what you do and everything else, okay?
Excellent.
Hello, you're on the air. May I have your name, please?
Oh, hello. This is Ellen.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Ellen.
How are you?
Terrific. I like the whole concept of animal communication. I wish I could do it. In any event, I have a foster cat who is kind of a troubled little animal. Is it possible for you to do a reading on a particular animal?
Absolutely. I can do readings both in person and distance. And also, you know, it's a common misconception that you have to be special to be an animal communicator. The reality is it's just like anything. If you want to be a great sprinter, you practice sprinting. If you want to be a great piano player, you practice the piano. So the reality is, yes, I can do a reading on your animal, and I absolutely will. But I also like to share the tools that a person can use individually in their home so that they're able to do it on a regular basis, because I do feel that that connecting with your animal in that way is very healing for both you and your animal.
Wonderful.
And, but I think we have to clarify that Jill does need a picture in order to provide these readings. So I don't think we can actually do the readings right here, right now. Is that correct, Jill?
Okay.
That's correct. I do actually need a picture. Everybody's gift is different. You know, some people can just go by energy. Some people can go by names. My specific gift is such that I need the animal space in order to read the energy.
But I think that you can offer some guidance because you're saying that you're having some difficulty reaching this animal. Can you give maybe some idea to Jill about what you're experiencing with this animal? And I'm sure she'll have some wonderful guidance in order to help you.
Absolutely.
And then afterwards, all of Jill's information is already up. You can, you know, contact her about a reading. But can you give her some information about what's going on and maybe she can help guide you in the right direction?
This is a rescue cat. He was picked up off the street and he was placed in animal care. He was put on, like, the euthanasia list, and he was pulled there by this local rescue group. So this is the story. He was this homeless cat found wandering the streets, and he looked a little bit like my old kitty, and I decided, okay, I'll take him in. I'll foster him until he can find a home. He's been with me for 6 months, and he's a troubled little individual. He bites. He fights with the other two cats, and it's been 6 months. You think they'd have, like, gotten used to each other, but he kind of acts like a tough guy. So anyway, that's what it is.
My first question is, Ellen, do you let him go outside at all, even in an enclosed area?
No. He has no interest in going outside.
Are you sure he hasn't gone? Are you sure?
Yes.
How do you know that?
I'm sorry. I have two other cats, and I'm in an apartment building, and there's a little space out the back. They go out there. He is afraid to cross the threshold of my apartment door. He won't even go out into the hallway.
You know, my first reaction when you said this was that he might need to go outside, like on grass. And, if you're in an apartment building, that may not be possible. In terms of the behavior, there are behavior modification techniques that are very simple that you can utilize in your home. For example, there's the water spray bottle or the shaker can, and these techniques are not geared to scare your animals, obviously. They're just geared, you know, some animals, especially if they haven't grown up in your home, they need to learn what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And very often, shelter cats or cats who maybe haven't lived with other cats, especially male cats, can be very territorial. So something that I may look up is behavior modification for cats. And, you know, there's a misconception, again, about behavior modification because often people think that means, you know, a choke chain or harming the animal in some way, when really it's a matter of training the animal to understand what's accepted in your home and what's not.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'll try behavior modification.
If you wanted to send me an email, I can definitely give you a few recommendations based on the work I've done. I just to go into it in detail might take a little bit of time. So if you want to maybe send me a quick email and just remind me who you are, then I can definitely send you a couple of suggestions that you can try.
Great.
Is there anything
Thank
that she
so
can
much.
Do in the interim to connect a bit more with her cat though, to help maybe make the cat feel more welcome, or is that something that you would have to talk to her in great length about?
I mean, Ellen, do you have any, are you an energy healer at all? Do you do any energy work?
I did first level Reiki and I've tried it and it doesn't seem to go okay.
Okay, so the thing about Reiki with animals is that it's not the same as Reiki with people. Reiki with people, you traditionally ask the person to lie down or sit in a chair and you would do a treatment on them. When you're doing Reiki on an animal, we always want to go by the animal schedule. We want to let the animal lead the healing. And so what you would do is, you know, maybe sit and pretend to read a book and, get your Reiki channels on. And eventually, it may not happen right away, but eventually the cat will come towards you and the cat will understand that you're healing, you're a healer. And, you know, because for animals especially cats, to pick them up and sit them down and then make them sit there is very disruptive to their habit. So with Reiki and animals, you just want to wait until the animal is seated comfortably and just turn on the Reiki and wait till you're, you know, maybe have some lavender hydrosol going on and just make a very relaxing environment for the animal so that they're a little bit more relaxed when you do begin the Reiki treatment. And as you probably know, Reiki doesn't necessarily have to be administered right above the cat. You can even sit across the room and intend for the Reiki to flow to the cat from across the room.
Okay.
Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Ellen.
Thanks
for calling.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks Bye. So much.
Bye.
Good stuff. Well, see, and that's just great how you were able to give her the tools that she needed to start moving forward with helping her wonderful little kitty cat. And I really hope that she does contact you and to ask, you know, what she can do further after this.
Okay. I hope so,
and
too.
So how does distant healing work for animals? Like, do you feel it's the same whether they're in, well, you were mentioning it doesn't really matter if they're in the room with you or right beside you or anything like that. Do they need to be, you know, close to you, or does it, how does this work?
Basically, if you want to get all quantum physics, you know, every cell has every molecule has a vibration, and every person's body is made up of you know, millions or, but you know, hundreds of thousands of molecules. And each individual person, animal, every living being for that matter, every molecule has a vibration, and together the molecules of one person's or animal's body emit a symphony. So together they make a symphony. And so that symphony vibration is that signature key, if you will, of that animal or person. And so by tuning into that signature vibration, I'm able to access the information that is within that animal or person's energy. And with animals, well, with anyone I do, my personal gift is such that I need a picture to tune into that particular mm-hmm. vibration. And,
right.
you know, this it's the same rule as when an animal crosses over. If I'm able to access that picture, that animal's energy is still accessible to me via telepathy, via the signature vibration.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And so just before we take another caller, undoubtedly many of our listeners want to know how they can help their own animal friends with common behavioral issues, and what kind of tips and suggestions can you give about this to help with some of the more common issues that you've faced as you've been working with this?
Well, a lot of people are under the impression that, you know, every dog is the same, or every dog of a breed is the same, or every cat is the same. The reality is every animal, just like every person, is a complete individual. They have their own individual personalities. They have their individual karma that they've come into this life with. And they have their own rules, you know, and what their dharma is, what their life purpose is. And given that earlier I had mentioned in my belief system, there's no delineation between animal soul and human soul. They're like us in that they have rules and they have personalities and they have, you know, things that they want to accomplish in their lives. And to really make that animal feel welcome in your home, you want to get to know the animal. Get to know what the animal likes. Get to know what the animal doesn't like. As an example, some cats really like to go, say, under the covers. And some cats really like to go on top of a clock tower. So it really, you know, it is individuation. It's really each specific animal, their likes and dislikes. And same with food. I mean, they like, just because one dog likes one food does not mean other dogs like other food, or other dogs like the same food. It's really important that people who want to help their animals feel welcome in their home really take the time to connect with their animals. And, you know, part of connecting with your animals is just being silent and observing. You know, observing the animal is a really great way to get to know the animal if you're not well-versed in communicating just yet.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And so what are the most common behavioral issues that people will ask you about?
Well, obviously anxiety issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just, you know, multi-animal homes, any kind of, a lot of animal behavior is fear-driven. And so when we examine, say, the anxieties or the cat's not getting along or whatever it is, we want to address specifically the fear. Animals, unfortunately, do experience a great deal of fear on a regular basis. And in order to calm those fears down, you know, you want to maybe look at things like harmonizing your environment with lavender hydrosols. Or something that really works that I find with separation anxiety is playing classical music when you're out. There's something about, there was a study done whereby horses and dogs were tested to figure out if they could sense and hear music in terms of beat patterns, like the drums, as well as the violin and the piano and all that. And it turns out that horses and dogs can really hear the variations in the orchestra and the variations in the drums and all. All the wonderful musical instruments that come into classical music. So in order to help ease, you know, the systems of the cats and dogs while you're out all day, it really is, you know, you may find it quite a big difference if you leave the classical music on all day.
Wow, that sounds really great. Thank you for that information. So we're going to take another caller now and see what their question is. Hi, you're on there. May I have your name, please?
Yes, it's Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Mary, how are you?
Okay. Several weeks ago, I had to put one of my 9-month-old cats to sleep, and they said that he had feline leukemia, and he was going into seizures, but he looked like a really healthy cat, and it just came on all of a sudden. I still have his brother, and I have 5 others. Now,
oh, wow.
Yeah, most of them, well, they're all rescues. One of them is 19, and the others I had taken in kind of, you know, just to foster because they were not in a safe place, and I haven't been able to relocate them, so I've had kind of kept them. A couple of them go in and out. Well, I have a black and white tuxedo who has been the healthiest of all. And a few weeks back, he started looking kind of lame, and he wasn't eating. And I thought, oh, my goodness, it looks like he's going the same route. But a friend of mine has been coming by doing some Reiki, and I'm doing the same. And just recently, he started eating again. He's a little picky yet, but he's eating. He was normally staying in the house, but then he starts hanging outside, and the temperatures have been very hot, and he's been under the car. Tonight it seemed like he wanted to come in, and I kind of wanted him to come in, but I'm a little reluctant because I'm not sure yet what's wrong. And I spent so much on the other cat, I can't take him to the vet. So.
Yeah. So, Mary, can I ask what you're feeding the cat?
Usually it's the Friskies, soft food, and then I leave out hard food as well. He doesn't seem to be drinking much water. I have to kind of force it.
Okay, so just right off the bat, something to note is that all processed cat food, even, you know, high, low qualities, whatever it is, any kind of cat food that you buy at the store is really high in magnesium. And what happens when after a prolonged exposure for a cat of really high magnesium is that it turns the ammonia, magnesium turns to ammonia in a cat's bladder. And what happens when there's too much ammonia is that you get a bladder infection, you get a UTI, you get a bladder crystal. And if you can remember, or maybe you don't remember, in grade 9 science, when we learned about the pH scale, so 1 was extremely acidic and 14 was extremely basic. Ammonia is a 14. Ammonia is extremely basic. So right now what's likely happening in your cat is that he's in pain. He can't pee very much because he has a stagnation of water in his bladder. And in order to circumvent that, in order to bring it back to center, you want to find something that's really acidic so you can balance it out. In traditional Chinese medicine, which is something that I practice on animals on a regular basis, the concept behind traditional Chinese medicine is to keep everything in balance. So with respect to the cat, and with respect to the ammonia and the magnesium in his system, what you want to do is, do you have a pen handy?
Well, if it's something I have to go buy, I really can't afford. That's the problem.
It's like $10.
Oh.
It's way cheaper than going to the vet.
Is the colloidal silver?
No, it's called Z-Nanos.
Oh, I've heard of that. Somebody recommended the silver, but I haven't tried it. I heard that D-Mano is effective on humans.
It is, and so is the colloidal silver. What the D-Mano's does is it brings it's very acidic, so it brings the magnesium all the way from too much magnesium right back into the center, so that you have a balanced urinary system. Because if you have a too much magnesium, then you can get kidney stones, and then you're in real trouble because that's life threatening. So my strong advice to you, cut it.
I was going to say he's a male, so that would, you know, be all right. I guess for either sex, it's okay, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? It's more prominent in men that they get bladder crystals. So I really strongly do advise you because I've seen this happen so many times I can't even count. And, 100% of the time the D-Nanos has worked. And it's inexpensive. You can get it at any local health food store. And you just sprinkle a little tiny bit on his food every day and until he starts to get better, and you'll see, he'll come in more and he'll be more friendly and he'll have more ease with using the washroom, and I really
you're not picking up then that he has feline leukemia. You're not picking that up.
Well, I'm not really doing a reading on him per se. I'm just speaking of specifically the bladder issue, which I believe is an issue.
Okay. That's what I thought was wrong with my other cat, but then he started exhibiting, you know, seizures and everything. He just suddenly got real bad all of a sudden, and they did the blood test.
So sorry to hear that. But if you do want a full reading with Jill, then you can always contact her after the show, because she needs a picture in order to provide that kind of reading. But I think the advice she's giving here is just beautiful. And please go ahead. You want to ask something else?
Well, if it's not too much, I have a female cat who got very skittish after she was spayed. She's never been the same. She hides most of the time. Her skin isn't too good, and she may have fleas. I think they all got fleas from a couple of them that go out. And I use the Diametris Earth on all of them, or put it in their food, and it does help somewhat. But I can't pet her, and she was hiding for a while under the cement. I got her back out and trapped her with food, but she hides under my bed, and then I go to pet her, and she runs back under the bed, and I feel really bad. She's the mother of these other cats.
Something that's really common with females who get spayed is that they, again, going according to traditional Chinese medicine, what happens when a female gets spayed is that there's a deregulation of fluids in their body. There's too much yin energy and not enough yang energy. And so what happens when there's too much fluid or too little fluid, the fluid systems get backed up. And oddly enough, the fluid system has to do with fear. You may also find eventually that she has a lot of earwax or that her hearing goes. But it's a matter of fluid deregulation in the body. So what you can do to enhance the fluid regulation is to change her food, but that's up to you. I would probably, once you get her a little bit more comfortable with catnip or whatever, I would start doing massage with her, and I would just get her to
catnip around for all of them, and sometimes she will come out and scratch around with it. Sometimes she'll come out and sit on the couch and watch me, but then when I try to approach her very carefully and talk really nice and, you know, blink at her and give her what she wants to eat, then she just kind of, you know, eats and runs. So
what you would want to do is supplement her diet with omega-3s, because omega-3s really bring the moisture. And cats, believe it or not, this is a common not commonly known fact. Cats were born, they initiated eons and eons ago in Africa, and they're not used to having water, and their bodies aren't necessarily fully adapted to drinking water for moisture, which is why we want to feed them wet food instead of dry food. And what happens if they don't get enough moisture from the wet food, you know, say in a case where the fluid system is a little bit messed up and they're eating the wet food, but they're not retaining enough moisture, is where we start to add the omega-3s and 6s, because that will help the skin to retain the moisture, and that will help the hair to be healthy and shiny and lustrous.
If I have some for myself in the powdered flaxseed that I sprinkle on my cereal, that's rich in omega-3. Can I put a little of that in her hard food?
You know, you can, but there are better sources. There are sources that are better geared toward cats, because flaxseed isn't a complete protein. So flaxseed is a good, it's half a step there. You want to go with a complete protein like coconut oil or hemp oil. Those are oils that are complete proteins that will have the complete benefits. If you use the flaxseeds, yes, it will help, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be the complete picture for the whole nutritious option.
So I could take pure coconut oil and mix it in soft food or something.
And you would only want to use a little bit, though, because it's fattening, so I'd only use like an eighth of a teaspoon for a couple of days in a row, because it's very, very fattening. So if you feed her a lot of it, then she's going to get really fat really quickly, and we don't want that either.
No, I've already got one of her sons that's real fat, and he's huge. He's 9 months. He's huge, and I have to chase him away from all the food. The brother that died was real fat, too, and I'm trying to keep him from going in that direction, but he's very lively. He does like to play, and he's very lively, and he has scratch and post. So, thank you for that information. And
you're welcome, Mary.
Continue to give them the Reiki also, right?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Very good. All right, good show. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for calling in. Take care.
Good night now.
Bye-bye. I love all the advice that you gave to her. That was just it was very interesting. I'm learning a lot right now, so that's great. I love this. In keeping in line with talking a bit more about animal nutrition, on the news we constantly see these recalls of the major animal food brands and, taking it a step further, what would your recommendations be regarding animal nutrition as a whole?
Well, you know, I think that every cat and dog is different, and I'm only going to be speaking about cats and dogs here because I believe that's, you know, predominant in our callers and our listeners. Now, every animal is different. For example, my mom has a German Shepherd who needs grains in her diet because she has a really sensitive stomach. I've met other German Shepherds who can't tolerate grains because, you know, they get allergies or they get this, that, and the other thing. So I think, you know, individuation is important as well here. However, it's 100% valid to say that cats cannot digest grains. You know, you'll see cat food with lamb and rice, and you'll see all these oats and brown grains and all these other sorts of things. And the reality is that cats do not digest grains. What that means is, you know, dogs and horses and humans have a digestive enzyme called amylase. And that is responsible for the breakdown of carbohydrates and for grains. Cats do not have amylase. One may attribute it to the desert, the days of the African desert, where they didn't have to digest wheat and grains because they didn't grow yet. And all they digested is the prey that they ate, in, you know, when they went hunting. For cats, the reason you see so many feline diabetes is because cats can't digest grains. And what happens if you feed a cat grains for a prolonged period of time is that it metabolizes as sugar. And what happens in all species is when you eat too much sugar, what happens? Your insulin spikes. And then when your insulin spikes, eventually you get diabetes. So that's where feline diabetes comes from largely. Of course, that's not a sweeping generalization, but that's a large population of feline diabetes, the aging diabetes, if you want to call it the type 2 later onset diabetes. Now, to avoid that, obviously, you want to go with grain-free. Now, the other side of that is that, you know, many cats and dogs will, you know, have sensitive tummies. So it really depends on the individual cat and the dog breed. You know, for dogs, it's a little bit different because dogs can kind of eat a wider variety of foods, whereas cats are just strictly carnivores. So the rules are totally different for dogs and cats. But it's really, I mean, if I can just leave anyone and everyone with this one sentiment, it's just really do your research, because, you know, you can read a label and you can read the ingredients, but the reality is so many brands have been recalled for fudging their ingredients. So it's really important, you know, to take the extra time and to really, you know, have a look and research what each ingredient means and where it comes from. And, you know, if it says chicken byproduct, it's certainly not the same as deboned chicken. You always want to go, if you have a dog, you always want to go with the deboned chicken or the deboned turkey. If you're using anything, you know, like, you know, the chicken and turkey meal is kind of middle of the road. But if you're going to go with anything else, with any kind of byproduct, then you're really in trouble, because that's, you know, then you're feeding the chicken feed and you're feeding the rooster head and the, all sorts of really disgusting, you know, byproducts, right? So you really,
I
mean, that's a bottom line.
No,
you need to really do the research. Yeah.
Wow. And so one question I've always had is, because you always see this on television shows, people feed their cats milk, and apparently cats love this. But I've heard along the way that this is actually very bad for them. Should cats be drinking milk or anything like this?
So it's kind of, you know, it's funny because people will say it's the same when you see people feeding ducks. They'll feed bread to the ducks. It's the same kind of principle. And then they always come back and they say, well, but they really like to eat it. And, it's, you know, does that mean it's good for them? No. You know, it means it's tasty to them. What happens when cats drink milk and you know, eat canned tuna and canned salmon on a regular basis is that it destroys their stomach lining. And then you get ulcers and you get all sorts of really terrible stomach problems. You get gas, you get diarrhea, you get basically IBS for cats. So, you know, it may be fun to, if you open a carton of milk, to just like put a little teeny tiny couple of drops in a thing and have them lick it. That's okay. Just not on a regular basis. It's really not healthy. And, you know, if you think about humans and most mammals, for that matter, they drink milk for only probably the first, what, 6? I don't have any kids. I'm guessing 6 months, 3 months, whatever. No, not 6 months.
For humans, it's a bit longer, but I think for animals, it's a lot less. Humans go usually 2+ years, or depending on
humans,
choice.
No, it's okay. Just like humans, it's unnatural. And you know, in my holistic opinion, I research this a lot. I think that adult humans drinking milk is a gray area, you know, scientifically, but I personally think it's unnatural, and to drink milk as an adult, and I think that across the board for animals as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Okay, and let's see. So one question that people might have if they're just starting to listen in is, overall, what is animal communication? How would you describe this? And, you know, how do you work on this to strengthen that ability?
Well, animal communication is basically, in some circles, it's called interspecies communication. And what that means is really just connecting with your animals on a telepathic level. You know, humans and animals speak different languages, but that doesn't mean that animals' languages are any lesser important or any or they don't have value. Animals do speak very loudly and clearly, but in a very more harmonious way. They speak telepathically, they speak energetically, they speak vibrationally. And with our subtle senses, we can very easily train ourselves to pick up on those vibrations and energies and telepathic notions. And it's just like training. Runners train for a marathon by running every day, or running, you know, this much farther every day from the day before. And it's the same with communicating with animals. If you really understand the pacificity of animals, you can really get into their consciousness and really understand how compassionate, how empathetic, how truly unconditionally loving they are. And, you know, it's pretty easy. You don't have to be special. You don't have to be gifted. Anyone can do it. It's all a matter of getting into the meditative state of mind so that you're able to access their consciousness. There's no trick. There's no rule. In fact, in my experience, in all the classes that I've taught and all the people I've trained to be animal communicators, everybody's gift is completely different. So, you know, I can share what works for me, but I always say in class, you know, pay attention to your body. Your body will tell you everything about how you communicate with animals. And not only is everybody's gift different, but every animal is different in how they communicate with us. So if I'm going to go and communicate with my cat and say she sends me pictures, she sends me messages in picture form and I receive them in picture form. If I go and communicate with, you know, my mom's dog, that reception is going to be different because that's a different animal and their gift is different and my gift is different. So what I would say is just, you know, be open, and there's no set of rules with animal communication. There are steps that I can give you that I will give you in a little while that you can use every day to connect with your animals. But the bottom line is there's no rule. There's no something that works for all animals. There's no, you know, be open to all experiences. And all animals have different voices, just like all different people do.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that some animals are more open to communicating with us, or do you find that there has to be a level of trust?
Yes. Yes, I do. In fact, before I go into people's homes to communicate with their animals, I spend, you know, 10 minutes or so in the car attuning to that animal. Because if you're an animal in a person's home and another person comes over, you're probably going to think that the other person is coming to see your person. So I like to sit outside the home or to sit in my home before I go over there and attune to that animal and let them know that I'm coming to see them and that I am open to receive anything that they want to tell me in confidence. And I will only tell the person what the animal wants me to say. And so it's important to establish that trust by first letting the animal know that you're going in to see them. And as well, when you get in the door, you know, respect the animal. It's all about respect. You know, if you respect the animal, then the animal will respect you back.
Wow, this is all so very interesting. You know, what I would really love to hear about is, if you can share an experience you've had with animal communication, if somebody called you over and was having a difficulty, and how you were able to help them with this.
Yes. I traveled over the winter and I had been working with a woman who was in Winnipeg by email, and I had resolved an issue with her. Her cat was up all night and was meowing and we couldn't figure out why. And, you know, she gave me, really important when you're assessing why an animal is behaving a certain way, you want to make as many notes as possible. So you want to say, oh, my cat is up between 3 and 4 and meowing her head off and I can't get to sleep, but after 4 o'clock, she's fine. Because in traditional Chinese medicine, the time of clock is really, really important. So, you know, if you are going to get an animal communicator to come in, or if you're going to see a holistic practitioner, take as many detailed notes as possible. I digress. So I'd been working with this woman while I was in California and she was in Winnipeg, and, you know, we'd resolved the issue. And then she called me a couple months later and said that she was having a different issue. And I don't like to know too much about what's going on before I go in there, because it kind of, you know, I like to not know anything so I can go into the healing with a fresh start. So I went to her house, mm-hmm. and she said, okay, my cat is 15. She's never liked food. She never eats her food. And she, all of a sudden at 15 years old, is peeing outside the litter box. And I said, okay. So I went in and I met the cat in person because I'd been doing distance healing work with her from California. So I went to the cat and I, you know, got to know her. And then I looked at her and then I asked my client to put a plate of food out for the cat. And so my client put a plate of food out and I looked at her and, you know, the cat smelled the food and then walked away. And then I said, your cat can't smell her food. Put some hot water on it. So then my client boiled some water and put some hot water on the food and the cat came running and chowed it right down.
Wow.
So immediately I knew that the cat had a respiratory issue. So then I put my head up to the cat and sure enough, the cat had feline upper respiratory virus, which is a very, very common virus in shelter cats, which we can get to that after. So I recognized immediately that the cat couldn't smell her food. And then I immediately realized that this was because she had upper respiratory virus. So then I prescribed colloidal silver because colloidal silver gets rid of any mucous membranes that are going on that are growing in the head. And then the second aspect of the healing was, or the reading was that the cat, all of a sudden at 15 years old, started peeing outside the litter box. And of course, that blanket statement has a whole bunch of possibilities, and it could be any one of a number of things. I went into the washroom and I saw that the step into the litter box was way too high up for a 15-year-old cat. So then I asked my client if she would mind cutting the opening down so that it was a lesser space for her to climb into. And she agreed. So we went and we cut a wider hole, a deeper hole in the entrance to the litter box. And sure enough, and then I went home and sure enough, the cat was readily able to use the litter box and both problems were solved within a matter of an hour.
That is amazing. I love that. I just can't get over how, you know, how involved this is. And it seems so like common sense, but it just isn't though, right? Like, you know, you hear it and you're like, yeah, obviously that makes sense. But, you know, we take these animals home when they're kittens and puppies, but we don't really know what to do with them, especially in their old age. I mean, I had a cat myself for almost 14 years. And, you know, hearing some of this, I'm thinking back and going, yeah, I absolutely could have done that. Why didn't I think of that? You know, so that is great.
It's really hard to work on your own animals because you're so attached to them that, you know, it's like anything. It's like doing a reading for yourself. You're so attached to the outcome often that you don't get, you get kind of a skewed answer because you really want that animal to live longer. You really want that $100 or whatever it is. So, you know, very often when you're asking spirit for questions or for answers, it's a lot easier to do these things for other people and other animals.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. So what is the most common thing that a dog or a cat will tell you when you're doing animal communication?
That's so funny. It's a trick question actually, because it's a common question people will ask me is, what's the most common thing a dog or cat tells you? And I say every animal is different and I have never gotten the same answer. I may have gotten the same, you know, complaint or the same comment from a dog, but it's always in a different context. It's always in a different a voice, different situation, different, you know, it's always different. So the reality is 50, I can go in a room with 50 dogs and ask 50 dogs one question and I will get 50 different answers. So that's the reality.
Right.
Of the situation.
Okay. No, that sounds good. And, we have a caller, so we're going to take another caller right now and see what their question is.
Sure.
Hi, you're on the air. May I have your name, please?
Hi, my name is Julia.
Hi, Julia.
Hi, Julia. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Hey.
Oh, good, thank you. Do you have a question for Jill?
I was kind of unusual, but my dog passed in 2012 and she was like 16 years old. She was, you know, with us for quite a long time, but I haven't had a companion since then. And I was just wondering if maybe one day, you know, another four-footed friend might, you know, decide to come be part of my life again.
Yeah. I mean, if that is something that you want to, if you do want to have another dog again and you want the perfect dog for you, I would just suggest that you put it out there. I mean, I would just, you know, when you feel that sensation, when you feel, oh, I'd really like a dog, just put it out into the universe to say, you know, I'd really like the perfect dog for me and my household. And I think that the more you focus on putting the signal out, the more you will be guided to the right place at the right time to meet the perfect animal for you.
Nice. Yeah, it's just, I know I'm in transition now, but I know at some point, you know, I would like that companionship again. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for my call. I appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
And even though I'm not an animal communicator, one thing I've experienced during other readings with my sitters is sometimes I'll see their pet and I'll describe them and animal friend, and I'll see another one right beside them, and sometimes they give this message that this is who's coming for you, this is who to look out for, this, you know, and it, they either sometimes they've already got a pet that looks exactly like that, or you know, it's happened a few times. Again, I don't specialize in that. I'm more about spirit guides, but it's happened, and it's I find that it brings comfort though, because then they kind of know that they have the blessing of their former animal friend who's at home and with them, and you know, wants them to be happy. And because sometimes people seem to feel like they're you know, forgetting their animal friend by getting another one, right? And so this is something that I find helps people during their personal grieving process, by knowing that their animal friend really is with them and wants them to be happy, and they're sending the perfect animal friend you know, in the physical world to them another time. Does that happen sometimes for
Absolutely.
You too?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I had the privilege of working with a couple who you know, some people you work with, you just really, I mean, they're really, really good people to work with. And their dog was dying. And unfortunately, they had gotten to the holistic vet a little bit too late, and had gone with Western medicine. And unfortunately, the line of work that they chose with the Western doctor didn't work out for this one particular dog. But I did officiate the funeral, and I did do a crossing over ceremony for this dog. And in the cross, just after the dog crossed over, my client had asked me, you know, is there any messages that she has from wherever she is? And I said, there's going to be another dog for you who she's guiding to be with you in about 3 to 6 months. And it's going to be the same breed that your dog was. And you'll know it's her when you see her. So there was a very specific message right after the dog had crossed over that the dog had brought through for these people. And just the look on their faces, I mean, they were elated, because you're right. You know, people often think that the animals are going to feel like they're being replaced. But the reality is, the animal's role in our lives is to see you succeed, is to help us through the dark times. And if they can, you know, bring a brother or sister or whoever to come and fulfill that role after they're gone, I mean, it's a brotherhood, sisterhood, you know? We're all one, and we all want to see each other succeed, right?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's just that human aspect of guilt. And I mean, it's no different than when grieving the loss of a loved one who is human. I mean,
Absolutely.
People feel like they smile and start to feel joy again that they're forgetting their loved one. And, you know, this is something that we all have to go through in our own way, in our own time. And undoubtedly, it's very similar when, you know, dealing with the loss of an animal friend. So, but for those animals that are still with us, what is the best way to help them feel safe and sound and you know, happy in their home? What can you say to our listeners that would help them help their animal friends right now?
Well, I mean, there are really a myriad of ways to help your animals feel safe and sound and happy. I think that, you know, initially we were talking about individuation and really getting to know your animal, your animal's dislikes and likes, and does your animal like to go for long walks or short walks? Does your animal like to sit in the sun, like to sit in the shade? You know, little details like that can really make a difference. And as well, you know, you wanna think about the fact that animals really understand a lot more than we think they do. Animals will understand, they don't maybe necessarily understand the whole English or Spanish or Chinese language, but they definitely understand the feeling behind our words. So, you know, even if we're lying still, I mean, I've had the experience where I've been lying in bed and my cat has been totally fast asleep, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I'm completely overcome with this gargantuan, enormous love for her. And I just, my heart just opens up and explodes. And sure enough, she snaps right out of her sleep and goes, huh? You know, and she can feel it even when she's fast asleep. And I have this insane amount of love for her, and it wells up in my heart. It'll wake her up in the middle of the night because she's that attuned to my feelings. And so if we kind of keep that in mind, we can really understand a lot about how maybe our arguments with loved ones affect our animals, maybe loud noises. Animals are extremely noise sensitive. So if you're living on a busy street, then the classical music idea would probably be a really great idea when you're home, especially, you know, dogs who are scared. The scared and noise thing and the food system thing really go hand in hand. So, you know, it's a really good idea to understand what your animal's strengths and weaknesses are. And as well, really take caution when bringing another animal into the home, because, you know, ideally I've had clients who
had the best interest of, thought they had their best interest of their cats involved and brought in other cats, and it's just been a nightmare. And, you know, all these things are fixable with animal communication, but we don't, it hurts us so much when we see our animals, you know, uncomfortable, right? So, it, you know, if we're bringing a whole other animal or person into the home and it's rocking the animal, the other animal's world, that's going to hurt us a lot more than it's going to hurt the animal, only because animals are used to duking it out for alpha rule. They're used to, you know, fighting for their territory. And for us humans, seeing our peaceful little cats or dogs getting into a fight on a regular basis, that's going to affect our sanity, really, you know? So just to really understand, your animal will tell you, it's just a matter of really tuning into your animal. Your animal will tell you if she's okay or not okay with having another animal come in. It's just a matter of taking a few minutes and calming yourself and asking your animal, and you'll get a response. I'll show you how to do that, or I'll tell you how to do that in a few minutes. And another aspect of really helping your animals to feel comfortable is to, if you're physically able, get down to their eye level and make eye contact when you're talking, because to the small dogs and the cats, you're just a giant pair of legs, right? So you want to, you know, to really, it's the same with people. It's going to be more comfortable for you, generally speaking, if you're having a conversation with the only other person in the room. If they're not making eye contact with you, you're going to be a little, you know, kind of put off by the situation. It's the same with animals. If you're working, you know, obviously not an animal who's just been adopted from the shelter who has issues like aggression issues and eye contact is a threat. Other than that, if you have an animal in your home, if your animal is generally pleasantly dispositioned, you might want to think about getting down to their eye level to communicate with them, because it's going to really make them feel safe and happy and sound.
Oh, that sounds so great. And one thing I've noticed too, animals, like especially dogs and cats, they seem to be very empathic and very empathetic. And, you know, like you were saying, they're very tuned into our feelings and our, you know, if we're tense or if we're upset. And one thing I really love is when I see, you know, dogs working or volunteering rather, like in a hospital and visiting people that
yeah.
need it, and the energy they can bring and that love and that healing, it's just so amazing. Do you find that certain animals are better for that kind of volunteering or that kind of healing vibration, or do you feel like, you know, any animal could kind of work towards that if they have the right person with them helping them, you know, kind of progress in their own way?
Well, I think that each animal, as well as each individual person, has his or her own karma and dharma. So I do feel like before they incarnate, animals know what their specific role is on Earth. So, for example, my cat, she's been with me for 12 and a half years. And boy, have I ever given her the run through time and time again, but she's strong enough to be able to handle my particular energy. So, you know, if you have service dogs or hospital dogs or, you know, the cats who go into elderly care homes, those animals were born into a specific role to fulfill that specific life purpose. And, you know, the creator is in charge of that, and the creator kind of it births these animals and gives them to the right people in order for them to facilitate their healing purpose, their life purpose.
Yeah, beautiful. And so I think now it's a really good time for us to talk about what you're going to be talking about how people can work at communicating and connecting with their animals. I think you said there was something
yeah.
about having like 6 points. That would be great for you to talk about that now.
Yeah, yeah, I'll talk. It's 5 steps, actually. But we can talk about now the 5 steps. That's okay. We can talk about the 5 steps to connecting with your animal. And it's you know, it's a fairly easy practice that you can do on a regular basis to get into the meditative state. And I'll just go through them, and then I can explain them. So you basically want to, the first one is to breathe. And, you know, to breathe is pretty standard, but you really want to breathe. You want to take some really deep breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. And just take a moment to relax and send away anything that may have plagued you that day or any kind of situation that's on your mind. You really want to just focus. Number two is to focus on the sound of your breathing. So the first step is to just really inhale and exhale. And then by focusing on the sound of your breathing, your frontal cortex, your prefrontal cortex is occupied. So it leaves the rest of your brain to be able to communicate with non-physical things. So you're breathing and you're focusing on your breath. Then you're connecting with your heart center. And for those of you who practice Reiki, or for those of you who have any concept of you know, chakras or anything like that, you know where your heart center is. If you're not well-versed in healing arts, your heart center is basically obviously where your heart is. And, you know, you can really feel it. You can really feel it kind of like a flower. So if you can imagine, you know, a green flower that's right over your heart or the center of your chest that opens And so you're breathing, you're focusing on the breath, and then, you know, a few minutes into the focusing on your breath, you really connect with your heart center, and you envision it opening and kind of like a petal is just opening. And then you're feeling what it feels like when you connect with your heart center is generally, you know, an overall unconditional feeling of love. Just love for yourself, love for your animals, love for the divine, just an overall interconnectedness of love. So you're breathing, you're listening to your breathing, you're focusing on your heart center. And then what you'll do is you'll envision your animal friend. So presumably when you're doing the meditation, your eyes are not open, so you're not looking directly at your animal friend. So presuming your eyes are closed, you're focusing on your heart center, and kind of in the line of your heart center, you'll envision your animal friend, and you'll connect with your animal friend from your heart center. So you can imagine perhaps a beam that comes from your heart center and goes right to your animal friend, right? So then the step four is to connect with your animal friend. And it may take a while. Again, it takes a lot of practice to be able to really latch on to your animal friend's energy. And, you know, the first couple of days, you may only do a couple of steps at a time without losing your focus, losing your concentration. But if you keep at it every single day or every couple of days or whatever it is, you know, you're sure to succeed with it. So you're connecting with the animal friend. And then step five is to ask the animal whatever you want to ask the animal. So just to review, that's start with the breathing, the in through the nose and out through the mouth. And then you want to connect. You want to listen only to the sound of your breathing. So you're focusing on breathing in and breathing out. So, you know, that may take anywhere from 30 to 60 to 90 to 120 seconds, however long you need to really tune everything else out. And, you know, for me, sometimes I like to use meditation music. I like to use Reiki music to really tune everything else out because I'm really noise sensitive. So, you know, if there's something going on outside, I like to put on the Reiki music or the yoga music or whatever it is and do these exercises with the music on in the background. Breathing, listening to your breath, connecting to your heart center, sending your heart center out to your animal friend, envisioning your animal friend in front of your heart center, connecting with that animal's vibration. And again, that's just a matter of tuning into that frequency of that animal, which sounds like a lot of fancy words for what it really is. You're just kind of being extremely empathetic and getting into your animal friend's energy. And then asking your animal friend, you know, are you happy? Do you like your food? Would you like another animal? How do you feel about moving to Fiji? You know, whatever it is, you can ask your animal any question. And when you're waiting for the answer, I guess this would be step six, Michelle. When you're waiting for the answer, you want to be really, really quiet and still. And, you know, when you're, again, animals respond in very different ways. So just be open to however that animal responds to you, whether it's a picture, whether it's a vibration, whether it's a feeling, whether it's a color. I mean, animals speak a variety of different languages, and it's our responsibility and our gift to be able to receive that message however the animal sends it.
Wow, that is so helpful. I think that everyone that is listening is going to be able to, you know, take these tools and work with them and try to understand their animal friend on a much deeper level. Sometimes we just think, oh, these are pets and, you know, they're just kind of secondary or, you know, we don't think of them as having individual personalities and, you know, things like needs and wants and all these things. And I think that you've just given so many helpful suggestions that will open up a whole new world for those that have wonderful animal friends at home. So thank you so much, Jill, for that.
Thank you for the opportunity. That's wonderful.
I'm good. And is there anything, before we end our show today, is there anything else that you find that would be very inspiring to help others who are interested in animal communication and working to become animal intuitive? What would you say to anyone who's aspiring towards that?
Well, I think that, you know, reading is a really, really great way to get into it. I think that you know, very often when we say we Google animal communicator, we see, you know, 5, 6, 10, 20 pages of animal communicators around the world. And you're like, oh, where do I start? And, you know, you really, at the end of the day, don't know who you're getting when you contact one. I would really say, and I say this with all my students, if you really are interested in something, I would go to a bookstore, like never mind Amazon, go to a physical bookstore or a library and just close your eyes and pick a book that really, well, I guess not close your eyes, but pick a book that really resonates with you. You know, you'll see shelves and shelves of books, but if you really, you know, connect with yourself and you really kind of are trying to feel out what direction you're supposed to go in, a book will come out, it'll pop out at you, it'll jump out at you, and that's the book you're meant to start with. And I feel that once you kind of start on the journey, you'll find yourself being attracted to all sorts of different books and classes and artifacts and articles and all sorts of things that will help fulfill your specific desire to communicate with animals and to help animals to be healthy.
Well, and this is actually something I feel that spirit guides help with. Often spirit guides will come forward and say, you know, they're the ones making these books kind of stand out to us and all that. So, you know, I feel like this is something that, you probably work very strongly with your guides on all of this. And so animal communication, spirit guide communication, I feel like everything is, you know, very interconnected, and that is just amazing.
It is. I mean, I think
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say animals are actually far more spiritual than humans are.
Absolutely.
And so it does make sense that the, you know, the spirit guides come through and tell us where to go, because animals, I mean, you know, people don't give them enough credit.
No, I completely agree. And hopefully after today, many others will be seeing their own animal friends in a new light. So Jill, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on our show today, and I hope that you'll come back and tell us more about your experience and give us more helpful suggestions and hints. And it's just been wonderful having you. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's been quite an honor, and it's been the time just flew by. It's definitely been wonderful. It was nice to touch base with those callers. And for anyone else listening, you can reach me at my email. It's jill.soulsticehealing@gmail.com, or www.soulsticespirithealing.wordpress.com.
Absolutely. And anyone listening, all of this information is up on the Blog Talk Radio site with under my name and all that. So do contact Jill if you'd like a reading on your animal friend or any sort of helpful hints. She's the person to call or to connect with. Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank everyone for listening and for our callers for calling in. And again, to Jill, thank you so much for all of your wonderful wisdom and advice. We really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. My pleasure.